Welcome back, Venture fans, to episode 32 of The Favor Campaign. Thank you all so much for being here. And thank you to Emily Mayo for composing our theme song. And thank you to Tabletop Audio for providing additional ambient music. And thank you to all the wonderful, beautiful souls who make this show possible by donating to us on Patreon each month. There's clearly a lot to be grateful for. Things are all kinds of busy behind the scenes as we are preparing to finally ship out the physical copies of the Venture Maidens campaign guide to all you lovely folks who back the Kickstarter. We'll have more specific updates soon, but until then, make sure to keep your eyes on those Kickstarter updates and join our Discord server to stay abreast of the latest and greatest news. So with all that excitement a-brewing, I'm going to keep it short and sweet. I'm going to hit you with that recap of what happened last time, then we'll dive right into the adventure. Last time on Venture Maidens. After learning the truth about Lori Silvertail and the mayor, our maidens made a plan to trap and then defeat the Fae hidden inside Rayna. After a watery battle, they were able to weaken the mayor long enough for her to confront Lori, finally giving Mina's tortured soul some closure. Before leaving for good, the Fae offered the party a cryptic warning that seemed to upset Lou. With the mystery solved, Enzo and Rayna were finally able to get hitched, and much merriment was had as the Festival of Oxia was celebrated long into the night. And that's what happened. So now, here's the show.
Gather round, travelers, to hear our tale. Trouble started with a booming quake as an unseen foe did the earth shake, casting a long-eared fellow into trouble. So our heroes must reach him on the double. Get a running start as we head into Favor, episode 32, Rabbit Hole.
Welcome back! It's another episode of Venture Maidens! Oh my gosh, I'm very excited to be here for episode 32. And it's an extra special episode because as you can see, or you'll hear very shortly, podcast listeners, we are joined by a guest today. Jorge, why don't you say hi?
Hi, everybody. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, we are so happy. We are so very happy to have... Hello! We are so happy to have you. You have been on the top of our guest wish list forever. And you're actually the very first guest of the Favor campaign.
Amazing. No pressure at all.
No pressure. No, you better be great.
You better be great.
No, just kidding. You can be terrible. Whatever you want. This is a fantasy game of imagination. Speaking of which, hey, if you are new here, welcome. We're the Venture Maidens. We are an actual play podcast that plays D&D 5th edition. And I do want to say, just for posterity before we dive in, Venture Maidens is unofficial fan content permitted under the fan content policy, not approved or endorsed by Wizards of the Coast. Just to make everything clear that we are SRD compliant for no reason at all. This is a very adult theme stream, so you can expect darker themes in the show. Specifically for this episode, we have a content warning, a body horror content warning that we always keep up because, you know, fantasy violence and such. We also have a natural disasters as a content warning tag for this episode. And that's all I anticipate. But we'll see. We'll see. How's everybody else doing, maidens? Jorge got to say hi, but how are you all doing? You ready?
Oh, yeah. It has been too long since I've played the D&D.
Mm-hmm. It's been like 2 months since we recorded. Because holidays are hell for podcasting or streaming.
Or in general.
Yeah, they're emotionally horrifying. It's great. So I'm so glad we're here, 2023. Let's do it. Let's make all our dreams come true. So, hey, let's get started. Hey, everybody. My name is Celeste Conowich. And tonight, I will be your dungeon master.
Hello, my name's Katie, and I'm going to be playing Luberia Stath, your drow rogue.
Hello, I'm Nassim Etemad, and I'm going to be playing your half-orc fighter, and more, but I guess we'll get into that, Fitonia Silvertail.
And hello, I am Sage, and tonight I will be Aoife Flannery, your benefic bard.
It's me, Robogoblin. And tonight, I'm going to be playing Monte, the Eldritch Knight fighter stuff.
Cool. We're so excited to have you and to meet your character. But before we do that, we have to do some housekeeping. Let's go ahead and talk about leveling up. So who wants to start here? What did we get?
Let's go opposite. Sage, you start first.
Sage, you start first. Oh no, Sage just took a bite. Oh, Katie, the cruelty. Oh my god, podcast listener, Sage is dying. Oh my god, choking on a burrito or whatever that is. How dare you?
All right, we're good.
All right, we're ready. We're centered.
All right, so.
Amazing. 2023.
Right. Starting it off right. So for our level 6 of being a bard, which is very cool, we get some super awesome stuff. So the one that we get for my subclass is called Animating Performance, Animate. So what I get to do as an action, I can target a larger, smaller, non-magical item that I can see, and I animate it. And so it gets a certain stat block, and then during its turn, I can spend my bonus action to have it attack, or otherwise it takes a dodge action and does other things. And then whenever I give someone a bardic inspiration, I can also use that bonus action to command it to attack. So it's really cool.
Oh
yeah.
So we're going to be like animating random things constantly. Okay, if I'm not good enough about explaining things that are around for you to animate, please just let me know so I can put one in there.
But the other thing I get for just the bard feature is that I get counter charm. So as an action, I can make creatures within me get advantage on saving throws against being charmed or frightened. So good against the fae.
Extremely good for a fae campaign.
Wow. Might actually use this for the first time ever, even though I've played a bard up to like level 12.
I've never used it, and I've played many bards. So I think this is the one. This is the one.
We're finally going to do it. And
we're
then for the first spells, we have just up to third level. And then I got to get a new spell. And the new spell I picked is Intellectual Fortress. So I can pick myself. Yeah, pick myself and someone else. And we both get advantage on intelligence, wisdom, and charisma saving throws for an hour.
Damn.
Amazing. All right. And then I guess in the middle, who goes in the middle?
Nassim is in the middle.
Who has very exciting news, because you're multi-classing.
I'm multi-classing for the very first time in my gaming life, and I'm taking a class in Druid, so I have two cantrips, and I'm going with Mold Earth, and to start my plant journey, start from the ground, ground up.
Mm-hmm. Work your way up. It'll be the sun at the top of that,
exactly.
So it'll be good.
And I selected magic stone, but I'm kind of backtracking on that now because you still have to use an action to throw the stones.
Mm.
So it's either between that or resistance, which I think would also be super useful.
Definitely.
Yeah, multiclassing is always a journey. So this episode, folks, we might be playing a little druid light until we have some chance to learn a little bit more about our features, but just be prepared and be
exactly.
Nice.
Exactly. Yeah, please forgive me because I've literally never multiclassed before.
Tony has also never been a druid, so I imagine that would be.
Yeah, it's all baby steps. We're going to fumble and fall down together.
If anyone out there is done super good at learning an entirely new job on the first day, I hate you, and no one else is like that, so.
Stop listening now. We don't want you here.
We don't want you here. You're too talented to listen to our podcast. How dare you? Very cool. And then, Katie, tell us, what's level 6 at Rogue like?
It's not that crazy, guys. I just get two...
Expertise.
And expertises. I feel like now I can be a little bit more frivolous with what I pick, because before I was like, okay, I gotta actually pick good things. But now I'm finally taking it in cook's utensils. Long time coming.
Yes. Good.
And then I did acrobatics as well.
Neat. So tumbling around, you can flip yourself and flip pancakes.
I was
Amazing.
Gonna say, you should see me flip a pancake.
Really good. All right. Well, Jorge, tell us, for the folks at home who have no idea what an Eldritch Knight is, can you please tell us?
Hi. So I'm so glad you asked. So Eldritch Knights are archetype of the fighter. So they're basically fighter magic sword users. So it's a sprinkle of wizard on a fighter.
So you get like spells and stuff too, right?
Yeah, so I basically just got one more cantrip and a spell. So that's the only thing, yes.
Cool, I love it. We're mixing all kinds of stuff. We're mixing fighter and druid, we're mixing fighter and wizard. I love this. This is going to be very exciting. All right, I think we've done it. That's all the business, that's all the housekeeping. So let's play some motherfucking D&D! All right.
Woo!
Whee! So our story actually begins in medio res moment, where we have Aoife, Lou, Tony, and Rook kind of staring down into this gaping hole in the middle of the earth here. And all around you, there are a bunch of very tall rabbit people. And when I say rabbit people, they look like very large rabbits the size of humans. And all of you are sort of considering this gaping, vast blackness you see in the earth. We can backpedal a bit for a few days here. So what has happened to bring you up to this moment? So it has been a few days now since the end of your last mission, when you successfully, you know, saved the wedding of this brand new couple, and you partied and you got a sweet payday, and then you all went off and I'm assuming spent some very well-earned R&R doing whatever it is that you need to do. Maybe back in Coven, attending to your realm businesses and all your plans and such, getting that all out of the way. When you had received a letter from your good friend Tandy, she had asked you to stop by the Witch's Brew, and she had received a letter from a dear friend who was in trouble. So we're starting it off with this letter that eventually sent you here to this moment, staring into a hole in the ground, surrounded by bunny folk. So Sage, would you please read this letter for us?
Dearest Tandy, it has been too long since we last spoke, and it saddens me greatly that my long overdue correspondence must come in the form of asking for a favor. As you well know, Briar Glen has enjoyed decades of peace in our sleepy little corner of the valley, but I fear that peace is now at an end. Two nights ago, all of the villagers were roused from sleep by a tremendous rumbling of the earth and shrill shrieks that could not have been from a creature of the material realm. When the rumbling and the noises stopped, we ran to assess the damage. We were horrified to find that several of our finest produce patches, along with the farmer's patch's entire burrow, and the farmer himself, were gone. Replaced by a gaping hole in the earth. The hole itself was so dark and so deep that we could not see the bottom, and for fear of monsters within, we elders did not investigate further. Instead, we sent a local hero, a talented fighter named Monte, down into the sinkhole to find what had become of the farmer's patches, and perhaps to assess the true cause of the rift. All this is prelude to our true problem, of course, for though a full day has passed since he went into the maw, Monte has yet to return. We are all horribly worried about the fate of both Patches and Monte, and have no more heroes to go after them. Given Briar Glen's unique situation, we are depending on you to enlist the aid of any adventurers you may know. From what I remember, all manner of interesting folk frequent the brew, and maybe one of them can help. Anyhow, please send us to them as soon as possible to resolve this situation. With every hour that passes, our hopes lessen, and our fear that the creature that started this mess might return. We are willing to pay in favors or gold or whatever mercenaries accept these days. Should Briar Glen come out of this unscathed, we promise to make good on the offer we chatted about so long ago. After all, no one grows carrots like the Harangon, even in the mortal realm soil. Be well, my friend. Love, Bun Bun.
Yes, excellent. Excellently well. take some inspiration for that stellar reading of this letter. Thank you.
Just created the whole idea for Celeste NPC that we're going to have to make.
What a gentleman.
Yes. Bun Bun, the scholar. Yes. Fantastic. So, very quickly, because, you know, storytelling, you have accepted this offer, and at Tandy's request and promises of much money and such, because she doesn't understand what it is and has a lot of it, you found yourselves headed to the Valley of Ylanthanol, to this sleepy little town in the very, very far corner of the valley, which is a community of Herringon. And Tandy could have told you very quickly about these folk. So they are Fae, actually, or Fae descendants in this world, in particular in the plains. And they do appear as, yeah, they're like basically anthropomorphic rabbits. Like they stand on two legs like people, bipedal. And yeah, they're of course well known for their exceptional produce growing skills. Athletic competition is also something they are renowned for. Before this, none of you had any idea that Herringon lived in the mortal realm, and you're pretty sure they're not, like, native to the mortal realm, but sort of in the same way that Aoife, you know, the satyrs sort of came out of the mortal realm. Would you have heard of them, actually, Aoife? Maybe you're probably the only one.
Yeah, I think I probably don't think that she has extensive knowledge about them, and what she would know is just rumor and hearsay, so it's just, they almost seem a little bit, like, mythologized, maybe. But I think, yeah, coming, that she comes from the valley, that she would at least have heard of them.
Yeah. And, they are, yeah, and even more, like, a lot of people don't know about them, because they're not really integrated with the rest of, like, elven society. They sort of do their own thing, and Tandy would have explained to the unique situation that is referred to in the letter. Briar Glen is not officially part of, like, the elven rulership of the Valley of Ylanthanol. There are a bunch of Herringon who chose to leave the fairy realm and settled in the valley, and which would have been problematic, I think, for a lot of sides, if the elves were like, wow, a whole bunch of fae just, like, came and set up a town here. And then also, obviously, the Eldrin Empire would have been like, absolutely not, we're not standing for that. So they sort of keep to themselves to broker their own peace, their own community. They're just here to, like, live their lives and don't want to, like, be bothered with everybody's politics. Hence, mercenaries needed. And all of this, too, would have been reaffirmed as you did arrive in this town, which was probably a very cute little town, like, situated in this, like, beautiful glen in the forest that has been absolutely surrounded by these magically grown, like, briar patches that deter, like, just wanderers from coming in to this place. And as you had stepped inside and made it known that you were Tandy's friends and you were here to help, Bun Bun, whose name is actually Honey, but Tandy's nickname for her is Bun Bun. Honey Bun Bun. She seemed very embarrassed when you called her that, and it was not her name. Has now led you, yes, to this hole, which has marred the entire other half of the town. So you walked in, and it was all cute, like, really immaculate homes, and, like, because they're all burrows, like, built into the earth, so they had all these cute, imagine, like, hobbit hole-style doors and stuff. And then just, like, half the town is gone, sunk into this gargantuan sinkhole that appeared. It's probably about at least 30 to 40 feet in diameter either way. And as you're looking down into the earth, you cannot see the bottom of it. Just like Honey said in her letter, it's just this awful thing. And so you all are standing there looking at it. And she says, well, that's it.
Liz just standing there with her hands on her hips, with, like, the dad stance, like, that's a big hole.
Sure is. Sure is.
Wait, could you remind us, how did Monty get down there?
Oh, yeah, and some of the older rabbit folk, and you can tell Honey, too, is aged compared to the other rabbits you've seen who have, I mean, beautiful, like, all different kinds of fur coats, of black and patchwork and white and brown. The edges, you know, of her muzzle, of her gray fur are, like, silver white. And her ears, you know, she moves a little bit slower, and her ears are more drooped than the upright ears of many of her kin. So another of these aged Herengon, like, helpfully scoots around to one side of the hole and, like, directs your attention to some spikes that have been in the ground and, like, a rope. Here! And then Honey says, yes, we provided them with rappelling gear. And so Monte went and went down. And then that was it. The line went slack. We pulled it back up, but it was like he was just untied. It didn't look chewed or snap or anything. So that's why we need you to go down into the hole and figure out what the heck is going on.
Yeah, that's... Oh, I'd really love to figure out if we could... What else have you tried putting down there? Has anyone tossed any flames, any torches?
Oh, yeah, we threw sticks. We threw rocks. What else did we throw? A carrot, somebody says. We threw a carrot?
Just in case Monte needed food. Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, we don't know where he went. Perhaps he does need food. And we didn't hear anything. It wasn't anything like what we heard last night when the hole appeared and there were these wailing sounds. We didn't hear any of that. He just went down and disappeared.
When you say wailing, was it like a creature wailing? Wind wailing?
No, they didn't hear any wailing.
No, when it first happened.
When it first happened, when the earth was shaking, that's when the only time we've heard the sound. It was like a... But worse! Like a monster, like nothing we've ever heard. It had to be a monster. It just had to be.
I mean, I've never gone, spelunking, but, I'm okay with going underground.
Right, and don't worry, we brought plenty of rope for you. And then the elders helpfully surge forward and, like, offer you a bunch more of these stakes and ropes that you see in the ground.
Tony goes right up and grabs, like, a whole bunch of rope and a few extra stakes as well, like, stuffs them into her belt, and she's like, well, I mean, there's really only one way to find out what to do next, so I'll see you guys down there. I'm gonna head in first. Let's keep in contact.
Okay.
All right, here I go. And I begin to descend down the spikes.
Quick DM question.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So, obviously, the underworld is below. Do I know if, like, this is an area that would, like, connect to it in some way if we went down far enough, or...
I think... Let's see, how familiar would you be with this part of the world? Why don't you go ahead and give me, I want some kind of check, maybe a nature or a history are both things that seem right for this.
Okay, both of those, so let's go. All right, well, that's a 7. What do I know?
You didn't study too long. You're a pretty young drow, so you weren't in school that long, and maybe you were out that day in geography, or maybe they just didn't even, like, talk about this part of the world, because it was so far away from where you were, which is primarily under the mountains way to the northwest.
Gotcha. Okay. Just wondering.
So you're like, ooh, but the thing is, you have definitely seen sinkholes like this before, and especially when there is a latticework of, like, underworld tunnels underneath the surface of the earth, that can frequently cause sinkholes like that. And in fact, this is actually a tactic that drow and other, like, underground creatures will sometimes use, like, burrowing, you know, weakening the ground underneath a certain place so communities or people will fall to their deaths. So that's a tactic you've seen, and it's probably unnerving.
Right. Well, Aoife, get your rapier out, because we just don't even know, okay? You're ready? You got your torches? How many torches do you have?
She just begins immediately rifling through her bag, all of a sudden really nervous, and she's like, Lou, I don't have any! What am I gonna do?
Oh, here! And the Herengon starts shoving, like, torches into your hands. Whatever you need!
Okay.
So you can have, you can probably carry, like, 10 torches. It's ridiculous.
10. Yeah, 10 come in a pack.
Yeah. Lou, seeing that, just nods approvingly and goes back down looking into the hall. Did you hit the ground yet? Just screaming down.
So, yeah. Tony, as you're rappelling down, you feel the sides of this cavern. Like, you're bouncing off, and it feels like, You know, it's a little bit crumbly, obviously, because it is a sinkhole, but you get past the point where you're at soil and you're really just in, like, stone, like hard stone and minerals, like densely packed earth, the type that should not have sunk in a sinkhole, right? Usually it is, it's that scattered earth or unsupported. So it's almost starting to feel like a well as you are going down. And I mean, you're completely surrounded by darkness. Other than that contact that you're making with the wall, you're not feeling anything else around you. It's like you're floating in free space. And you can hear Lou's voice distantly. Yeah.
Yeah. How far down have I gone? And I can still hear. And now it's all stony.
Yeah. You've gone down probably about 60 feet. So you're getting towards the end of that first rope. I'm assuming if you would like, you can totally tie another rope down, but each rope is about 60 feet.
Yeah. If I'm approaching the bottom, I'll think I'll give like 4 feet of slack below me and then tie up another rope.
Yeah. So you get towards the, towards the tail end of your rope and you tie off another one. So you're about 60 feet down now and you can hear Lou's voice like echoing a bit down to you, but it is definitely becoming muffled and you won't be able to hear her for much longer.
Still no bottom, Lou. I've tied another rope, so that should be the first mark when you guys come down of where I am right now. Can you see me from where you are?
Yeah, 60 feet down. Yeah, totally. Drow supervision.
Oh, well, I didn't know how dark it'd be, but
okay. I got another rope's worth about. Then I'll be scared.
All right, I'm going to keep going. Keep going down this second rope.
So it's been probably a few minutes now of your friend rappelling down, Aoife and Lou. Are you still staying up at the top? All the heron gone around you. It seems like the entire village is swarmed around, just like watching down into the hole. You don't think they can see anything, but they're like waiting anticipation.
But once it would become to the point where I would stop being able to see her, I don't think that Lou could wait any longer because she'd get nervous about her going by herself. And she'd just be like, I'm going to start coming down just in case because we have no idea what we're dealing with. And I have anxiety. So get ready.
That's a mood.
I hear you, girl. Still here.
And you are getting to the edge, Tony, where you can't hear her anymore. So it's just like the vaguest like sound that is coming down as you continue down into the dark. And you feel yourself approaching the bottom of that second rope.
And it still feels like a straight drop. There's no like curvature in this tunnel.
There is nothing. Fuck. It's so weird. It feels like there's a hole punch like that went through the earth and like made this well shape. Extremely unnatural. You can tell this is not natural. Whatever this is, something caused this sinkhole for sure.
All right. Our second rope. I imagine I had at least four. Like I took four with me.
Yeah.
I think two large bundles. So second rope.
Whew. All right. This is your third rope that you're doing now. Yep. So you tie on another rope and you go down. So now you're about 130 feet or so deep in there. Aoife, where are you? Are you still waiting back up at the top?
So she would wait maybe a minute while Lou is climbing down and then start to like stagger their descent. But she would, eventually start going.
So as you're climbing down into the dark, Tony, you get down 130 feet, 140 feet, and you start to feel really weird. It's like something that almost creeps up kind of in the back of your consciousness, like a feeling of wrongness or otherness, almost like the way your head kind of spins right before you pass out. And very suddenly that turns to like a lurching feeling in your stomach that washes over you, and you think you black out just for like a second because you're still on the rope and like, but you feel your body like doing the drop, and then you're like, ugh, and you're suddenly thrown back into where you were. The rope is still here. You're still in the dark. You're still climbing, but you can't shake the feeling that something has changed.
Oh, my worst nightmare. I thought it would be another dimension.
Maybe I should have put black holes in content warnings. Sorry, damn.
Lou, hello? Can you hear me? Are you up there?
Lou, you cannot hear. Nope.
Is there any light above me?
You only have about 60 feet of dark vision. So you really can't see too much of what's going on. But I will say vaguely, vaguely at the very, very, very far end of your vision, you think you see above you a pinpoint of light.
I'm going to see if I can just hold on. I'm not going to go any further down. I'm just going to stop where I am and try and remember that my friends are behind me, above me, and
yep.
See if they can catch up to me.
Right. So, Lou, you get down 120 feet. That was like the point, you know, where you last heard Tony, and you keep going down. Do you just keep going?
Yeah. So I think that I would go down, especially because I feel like Lou is just going to be nervously like, all right, I'm coming. Don't let me like run into you. And I assume at some point the answering would stop. So
yep.
She's like, oh shit. So she's going to try to hustle down.
And that very same kind of weird feeling comes over you as this happens. And you just, yeah, feel yourself like rock. Something strange passes over you. When you kind of open your eyes and land and see you're still on the rope and stuff, you can see about 60 feet above you, Tony is hanging onto this rope, like petrified in the dark, looking freaked out as hell, which you can see with your dark vision.
Wait, above me?
Above you, on the rope.
What the fuck, Tony?
You hear Tony from below you. What the fuck? From the Blue's fuck? Voice from below you on the rope.
Lou?
How did... But
did you fall?
No.
Are you okay?
Maybe? What is happening? Wait, I'm okay. Are you okay?
No, I don't think I am. Something is very weird here.
And Eva, just do I assume you continue as well and find yourself in this mess?
She does, but Aoife is starting to panic because, one, her upper body strength, not great. So yeah, she's already sucks. Struggling. Like,
so I think maybe you just climb down out of sheer, like, just keep going, just keep going.
sheer terror, especially when she doesn't hear anyone. And when she hears Lou's voice disappear, she's like, oh my god, she is sweating. Like, her hair is starting to get stringy and stuck to her face, and she's just terror sweating down this rope.
And so, yeah, Tony and Lou, as you're having this conversation, like, you suddenly hear below you, Lou, maybe like 10 feet down on the rope, like a cussing, sweating, sighing Aoife seems to appear below you.
Oh, thank all that is delicious. Oh my god. Okay, Aoife!
Oh my god, you're here! Where are we?
I want to get off this ride.
I would like to leave.
Is this a bad time to say I'm afraid of heights?
Yes! Oh, geez.
Extremely bad.
Just, honey, just go down as fast as you can and let's try to hit the ground. Do you have rope? I've got rope. So much rope.
All right.
Yes.
Oh. I guess on the new side of this, Lou, your dark vision would kick in because Tony couldn't see quite to the top. But you, with your superior vision, also see that pinpoint of light far up above. And you're like, oh, okay, you're like, you clock that and you're like, good, we're still, huh? And then looking at it, you realize that the sky up there is definitely a different color than where you just were, which was like a nice kind of blue, you know, mid-afternoon, some dappled sunlight. Whatever is going on up there is like a deep, weird seafoam neon mess, like something very different.
Fucking say shit, I'm telling you.
I think it's time to climb our way out of here. Before we lose all strength.
Yeah, I think you're right. Let's go towards that crazy-ass teal sky. Time to climb up, guys. I think we might be someplace else now. It's not the same place out there.
So am I now on top at the highest point of the rope?
Yeah, so you were on the bottom before, and here in this new world, or whatever happened, you appear to be at the top of the rope, the closest to the entrance, and then it's Lou, and then it's Aoife. So the exact opposite of the order in which you descended.
Oh my god, my whole body feels weird just imagining this.
Yeah, you all feel weird, oh for sure. And as you are hanging onto the rope too, I will say your senses start kicking into overdrive. You start to really smell the earth and, like, the peppery, you know, minerals around you, and you feel the darkness, like, oppressing in. And again, you recognize that as that same thing whenever you step into the wilds, into the fairy realm, where everything is so much more to your senses than before. So you're also in this weird situation being assaulted by your senses, like, now kicking into overdrive as you're definitely, you think, in the wilds.
All right, up I go.
And I'm sure even you, Tony, at this point are starting to feel like, you know, the noodle arms of just sheer lifting yourself up. And even though you all had like little harnesses and you can have little clips too as part of like the climbing kit, they stacked you up. The Harangon were like, whatever you need, friends. So that's helping you, Aoife, you know, as you're able to clip yourself up just one arm further and further. But you get closer and closer to this oddly colored sky. And yes, as you are getting closer, like, the light fills in, which is of great comfort to you, like, just being hanging in the dark, and you start to hear the sounds of birds and insects, and it's all larger than life, and just, you can, you know you're coming out of the top, and Tony, you, like, crawl your way up, and you can see now, Tony, you weren't really noticing it before, but a few feet away from you, there is like a stake driven into the ground and a rope that is hanging limp, as if someone else has been here before, with the exact same type of spikes and the exact same kind of rope you've been using. And perhaps that is the signal of the trail that Monte left behind. Are you pulling yourself up?
Oh, yes. I am up and out of that hole, but I will stand there and like look for any immediate other clues around the circle, like what direction he might have walked off to.
Yeah, so you clock that rope thing, and then you can, like, kind of take in your surroundings around you. You've been in the wilds now several times, and you're starting to get pretty familiar with the general terrain, at least of the spaces in between, that they call it the in-between. That's mostly where you travel and where you've been, like, tromping through, you know, the jungle and all of this stuff. But here looks very different. It looks almost like the mortal realm in some ways. As you're standing there, you see in front of you this like large field of wheat that just goes on like golden and shiny as far as the eye can see. And then you kind of turn to your left and you see this like huge patch of apple trees that just stretches on for miles. And then you can even turn behind you and you see like this cast over almost like bioluminescent lit like mushroom farm on these like strange caverns. And like to your right, you turn again and you see like a green field like full of like dairy cows. It's like everywhere you turn on different sides is like a different kind of biome entirely and different like farm space. And just close to where you are here in this sinkhole, there's this like large gnarled tree that is up. And as you take this all in, you hear a, oh no, like from something that was like clustered at the base of the tree. And you see this person stand up in front of you and their head, imagine a person like the size of a dwarf or so. And then their just head has been replaced with a bulb of garlic. And they're looking at you with these, like, eyes, these, like, tiny little beady eyes in the middle of, like, one garlic peel. And it's, like, green onion tops are, like, quivering as it's, like, and pointing at you and then kind of, like, throws itself behind a trunk.
What the hell?
Please don't harm me. I am merely a guard. Oh my god, that's immortal. You hear some deep breathing coming from behind the tree
trunk. Hey, it's fine, it's cool, we're cool, sir, guard, whatever you like to be called. Can you tell me where I am?
You just hear like a low sound from behind, as if trying to be quiet and just not quite containing their terror. So they're hiding.
All right. My name is... what is the name I use? Franny.
Franny.
What are your fey names?
Yeah. My name is Franny. It's okay. Well, we can talk to each other. That's fine. I just don't know how I got here exactly.
So Lou and Aoife, as you're below, and you know, you're also coming up to the top here, you catch this conversation and you can like, drag yourselves up over the edge here. So Aoife and Lou, do you want to weigh in on this?
No. She's just, like, looking and tilts her head at this garlic person and then looks at Aoife and gestures towards them.
Talk to them. I don't know what. We gotta find more to
go. I will walk up and say, we don't mean to impose, but we're looking for someone. Another mortal that would have come by here recently.
And you, like, in approaching them, you kind of went up to, like, the root they've been hiding behind, and they're just crouched on the ground looking up at you, and, you're really not gonna eat me?
No, that would be terrible!
I hear that mortals like to eat garlic bread. Is that true?
Well, some of us do, but, you know.
Yeah, like crying into his hands on the ground, like, please, I'm just a lonely alummy knight. I don't know any of
you. Alummy knight?
Yes.
Dead. Well, either way, we're not on a mission to make garlic bread. We're looking for someone who might have caused that hole in the ground over there.
Oh, are you here to punish him?
She shrugs. I guess.
Oh, okay, all right. Yes, okay, so... okay. So I was sent to guard the hole, and I was told if anybody came out of the hole to bring them to Duke Walla. Okay, so I'm going to bring you there, and yes, if you're there to punish the mortal... Okay. Can you promise me? And he, like, clutches your vest, like, Aoife. He's like, can you promise me that they're not going to eat me either? Seeming to indicate Tony and Lou.
She holds up her two fingers and she says, I promise.
Okay. I don't know what that is, but obviously some kind of mortal magic. So I trust you completely. And he stands up and looks at you all. Please, if you would, I will lead you now. To see Duke Walla.
Thank you.
Yes. You are now more mortals coming out of the hole. So clearly this is relevant to my mission. And he begins to, like, stomp off between, you know, the wheat field and the cow field in one, like, direction.
Excuse me there, Gardlick. Did your duke happen to make this hole?
No! No! Nobody, well, nobody here made this hole. Why? Why would anyone in the Blossom Demesne make a hole in the Blossom Demesne? It makes no sense. We have the culprit now in custody. Actually, Lord Walla is interrogating him at this very moment. But he has been quite reticent so far, and Lord Walla is not pleased.
Well, we'd like to get to the bottom of this, too, so...
Good!
Wait, is the garlic person saying that... Wait, are they saying that the Duke... Wait, who are they saying that we should punish? I thought it was the Duke.
Oh, no, so it's the other mortal who apparently came through
they're
before.
They're suspecting him just because he came through the hole.
Yeah, yes.
Got it.
Good summary. Okay. Yeah.
Logic.
An extremely logical way of thinking, yes. Anyway, it is not very far. And he continues striding along the open road. Is there anything else you want to ask before you arrive at... By the way, he said Duke Walla and has mentioned Blossom Demesne, so it's safe to assume this might be one of the dukes of a court you're about to go see.
So definitely want to ask about the Duke.
Oh, he is fantastic. His royal stinkiness is... just in possession of the most potent and vibrant stench in the land. And he is a fair and just ruler. He's the one who gave me this job.
Well, we're very much looking forward to becoming acquainted with your great duke.
I will warn you, he does have a bit of a temper. So if you talk nicely, you might you might do better than this other mortal. I don't know if you know them, but they're fluffy and strange.
Long ears, would you say?
Yes, the longest. I don't understand that. Ears are terrifying. I see you all have them, but they're small and manageable.
Yep. Okay. I don't really... I got nothing. Luke just stretches on.
Well, that's fine, because we're here. And you look ahead, and you see, so again, like these... This whole realm, this whole place seems to be made up of these patchworks of like various sized biomes, almost like plots of different gardens that are all like butted up against each other. And as you are moving through these fields, there are these very thin like dirt roads that you're walking in between these places. And as you're passing by, you catch glimpses of various types of fae, like working in these places. You see people, you know, picking produce into baskets or like watering things. And very much in the way of the fae, you're seeing all manner of creatures, from things that are humanoids to plantoids to things that you can't even begin to qualify, all seeming to work in harmony in these various little plot places. And as you turn the corner and you come to like this big, almost like a flattened out plaza, you can see that there's a very cute, like, little cobblestone wall fencing in this certain part. And at the center of it is, like, a massive greenhouse. Like, the Conservatory of Flowers in San Francisco would be, like, a good example of this. Like, this long building that is just panels and panels of glass with, like, wrought iron in between them and this cool, like, domed structure on top. And you can see, even from here, that there are so many plants that are butting up against the glass from inside, and the fog of heated air is clearly coming from within. And a lot more of these garlic-headed individuals are stationed around this building, seeming to guard it, and they are all wearing mismatched but very brightly colored uniforms of various kinds. So it looks like they've just adopted uniforms from every culture ever and kind of taken what they liked individually and created these very strong looks for themselves stationed around. And as you pass by with this garlic-headed fellow, they all wave and look curiously at you, but nobody seems too terribly threatening as you pass through the main.
This is, like, the most casual group of guards ever.
Extremely casual, yeah. I mean, given the guard that brought you here,
yeah,
it doesn't seem like he is rare for this type of attitude. They all seem to have that sort of cavalier attitude. The most frightening thing you do see here, the most threatening thing, is probably when you do pass through these doors, you are in, like, a very large audience space. Again, though, it looks like the interior of a greenhouse. So you have these like patterned cobblestone ways here that all kind of meet in the circle around this very large fountain. And at the top of the fountain is a chair. And sitting on top of the chair, on top of the fountain, on top of the cobblestones, is a very large person that has a big like purple head that is very tall and kind of teardrop shaped, like a large shallot. Dressed in all of these like noble royal clothing, again that same that mismatched, like they're just attracted by colors and patterns and silks and all manner of things. Who seems to be yelling at an individual who is trapped in a vine cage that has grown around them? Like imagine a bird cage the size of like for humans, just sprouted out of the ground, and a very Well, you see the person inside. Jorge, why don't you go ahead and explain what we see?
All right. So you see like a very worried looking Herringon, which is a rabbit folk. He is brown fur. He has a little bit of white patches all over him. He is wearing a green scarf. He is also wearing like this green buccaneer's coat, overcoat, and a gray shirt. Tiny pants. He has a tiny little piercing in one of his ears, and he's just looking around. And but can I explain now? Can I just go? I didn't cause any of this.
And the Charlotte-headed person sitting on the throne goes, you have been saying that for hours, and I am done. And I am done listening to that. Wait. Shh. And he holds up like a big leafy finger. Wait, who is this? Who is this? He's like yelling at the guard, and the guard standing next to you is like, more mortals that came out of the hole, sire! And yes, raising his hands to the air as he says it. And the person who you probably assume is Duke Walla says, wait, more mortals? Do you? And he looks at you, Monte. Do you know them?
I do not know them. Hi, hello there.
How many more mortals can we expect to come through this hole? Because this is getting out of control, he asks you, Monte.
But I just told you, I didn't know how I got here. So I was just, let me just explain from the beginning. I was just looking at this sinkhole up in my village, and it just appeared. And right when I was about to touch it, well, you see, I gotta explain also that I got like this power that makes me transport myself into a different. It's a thing.
Yeah, he's squinting at you like, okay.
It's a thing, but I just did that and I flashed into the ground here.
Yeah.
And then I was about to go up or try to go up. And I got hit by a rock. I don't know where it fell. I don't know where it hit. But I was just there. And then I passed out. And now I'm here explaining myself to you, your stinkiness.
Mm-hmm. He nods, seeming to appreciate the at least the nod to his greatness. He says, other mortals, come here. Come here, come here, and like ushers for you to come up, and the little garlic guard by, he's like, go, go.
Well, as we walk up, Tony like leans over to Lou and is like, wait, did Monte just admit to making the hole?
No. Monte went to reach in to start the descent and triggered some kind of magic thing and then got a rock hit on it. What's more embarrassing is he admitted that he got a rock hit on the head and just passed out.
I'm sorry, can you speak up? I can't hear you. I can't hear your testimonies. This is a court. This is a Blossom Royal Court affair. I'm gonna need you to speak up.
Lou gives like a deep like bow.
Tony like leans her arms forward in front of her, outstretched, palms up, bowing down to her toe.
This seems to please Lord Walla as you do so.
Yes. Your Dukeness, see, your prisoner here doesn't know us, but we know him. He's our boy.
How is this possible? He interrupts you.
We're working for people who know him to bring him back.
Is this true? He asks you, Monte.
Probably, yes. Yeah.
We were sent by Honey, if that makes things any better.
Oh, yeah. I do know them. Yes.
There's one of the elders who actually kind of bullied you into going down the hall in the first place. But, you know, she usually means well. So you all went down the hall. You came after him. And so then who made the hole?
I don't know.
We sure would like to know.
Excellent question. You're on the right path. We don't know.
Well, yes, it's a big problem because the hole appears in my lands and my daughter, who was out by the hole, is gone. So someone needs to bring her back.
Aoife will step forward with a gracious and low bow and curtsy and will say, well then, by the sounds of it, we would be doing you quite a big favor in bringing your daughter back and figuring out what it is that created the hole and dealing with them. Maybe that's like two favors right there. We would be more than happy to do this for you and bring back this mortal where they came from so as not to disturb you again.
And he like kind of leans up to his full height, which isn't super tall, but as he leans over, this smell just just washes over you. Like, yes. I mean, garlic to 1,000, like pure raw garlic, not with any good spices or anything, just like the intense, like, and your eyes start to water, like, out of your own, like, you can't stop them, like, you're cutting onions, like, that's the feeling there as he looms over you and says, "Well, you are all incredibly suspicious, so while it might be a favor for my daughter, you, to get my daughter back, I will be doing you a favor by letting this suspicious individual go." And he's pointing at Monte. "So that's only one favor, little satyr."
Aoife thinks and weighs this and mulls this over in her mind. And she says, "But if he turns out to be a troublemaker and we dispatch of him, aren't we doing a favor by taking him off your hands and not having to stain your dukeliness with such mortal blood and grit?"
What?
she shushes you.
Make me a, because this is probably a deception, yes? So,
yeah, sure.
Monte, mean right. Mug him. Look really troublesome.
Let's see that bad bunny rabbit.
Go full bugs.
They've got a piercing. They're bad news.
Oh, I get advantage. Oh, that's not better. All right, so we are going to use our force of personality feature in order to make it so that I get an 18 on the roll plus my bonus for a total of 23.
Damn.
Nice.
And he like seems to consider what you say, and you're pushing past, by the way, like your eyes are watering, you're kind of wiping your face as you're like making your case.
Her eyes are getting red.
Oh my god. Monte, I think you've been in it for long enough that it's probably like your nose is burnt out, like you're fine at this point.
I can't smell anything now.
You can't smell anything anymore. And he very suddenly like slumps back into his throne and says, "Fine. The best I will do, because it is a small favor, because I could crush that little rabbit in just one stomp of my big foot. If you do this for me, I will give you one big favor and one small favor, and that's it."
"Your justice and generosity knows no bounds."
And as he nods, all the other garlic guards who have been kind of like watching you open mouth, they're like, "Oh yeah," and like look around and also nod.
Amazing.
"Then it is decided. Good." And he snaps his fingers, and Monte, finally, you're like out of the vine cage.
Before I get out of the vine. Oh, wait, I got it. And I just snap my fingers, and you just see like this giant greatsword, super cool greatsword, appears in my hand. And I just cut all the vines. "Thank you. Thank you."
"Oh my god." Yeah. And the Duke like leans back, and all the guards are like, "Whoa." And they like stumble over themselves, and they're like, "Oh," looking around. Like, and you realize now they don't have any weapons on them either. So they're like, "Whoa."
"Yeah, that's okay. That's okay." And I snap my fingers, and it disappears. The greatsword disappears.
"Oh my god. It might actually be useful."
I pretend to not hear that, but my ear just twitches.
Like, yeah, like no, it's like when you call a cat and you know they heard you, they're just not looking at you. And so the king, after he gets out of that heart attack, like looks back and says, "Well, you all must find my daughter. The Princess Burgundy has been missing now for at least a day, so find her and bring her back. And if you don't, I will know, because these are my lands. If you try to leave, I will know, because these are my lands." He says, and kind of like slams his like little leaf fists down.
"Well, that is a beautiful name for your daughter, and we will be sure to reunite you. If you could point us, it was just back at the hole where she went missing?"
"Yes, she was back at the hole, but before this once suspected person," waves his hands at you, Monte, "showed up, we were going to ask a nearby individual who might know more, so I suppose he would be a good place to start. He's a terrible fellow, always complaining about everything, but he is close by. Professor Mole is who you are looking for. If you carry out of my realm and just go 17 patches down and then 14 to the left and then down 7 more and then to the right 4 patches, you will find him. His stupid little hovel. His stupid little face.
Okay.
He knows everything about underground and he will tell you.
Can I make an insight check on this?
Yes, absolutely.
21.
Okay. You get the feeling he does not like this guy, but somebody probably above his station has forced this Duke and Professor Mole to, like, get along, is the impression you get. It's like two children who just do not like each other, but the principal's like, if you guys fuck up one more time, like, you're both getting expelled. But it does seem begrudgingly true. And it pains him greatly that he was even going to have to go and talk to this fellow. And he seems disappointed that now that Monte is no longer a suspect, he has to go and talk to this guy again.
Okay.
He was relieved to have a suspect crawl up out of the hole instead of having to go and talk to this Professor Mole. He seems to resent greatly.
We've all been there.
we got this, your onion garlicness, and we'll find the princess. Thank you so much. And I just do a little curtsy.
I'm watching you. You know.
Yeah.
You and that big knife you took out.
Yes. I'm no problem. I'm not the bad guy here. I'm not the bad.
We'll see, he says.
Bowing out.
Yeah. So you may all, yes, as you exit, you can finally speak to one another properly.
Finally, I can breathe a little something else.
It smells so great outside, like sunshine.
I'm never taking nature for granted. I swear.
To be honest, I'm a little hungry.
I was going to say, I was like, if there were more fae like these guys, I think I'd like them more.
Jesus. And I just say, if you're all hungry, and I open up my coat, and you can see, like, this tiny pouch, and I have carrots.
Oh, homegrown heirloom carrots?
Yeah.
From the Herringon Village?
They look, like, super good. Super fresh. Would you like a carrot?
Absolutely. Yes. That looks so good.
And I offer carrots for everybody.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Oh, man, Lou, you as a chef, you bite in this carrot. Never have you tasted a more, like, perfectly sweet, but like with a little spicy on it, like a such a flavorful carrot. It's remarkable.
Shit, that's fresh. I'm gonna have to talk to you.
That was a good carrot.
But sorry. I'm Lou. Nice to meet you and your carrots.
My name is Monte. Nice to meet you, everybody.
Tony.
Yeah, Aoife introduces herself, and she'll take out the letter and show it to Monte. Be like, we got summoned to come and rescue you and see what the heck happened. And, I mean, surprise, surprise, we ended up in the Fey Wilds.
This is the Fey Wilds. Oh, okay. Interesting. But first of all, thank you all so much for rescuing me. I've been trying to talk to them for a while and they didn't listen and I just,
well,
you know.
Yeah, it seemed like you could get out of there pretty easily. Why didn't you do that earlier?
Because if I do that, they would probably think that I was actually the culprit. And so I was innocent. I just didn't want any more guilty stuff.
All right.
Don't really seem that well trained, but I mean, there is a shit ton of them. Speaking of, Tony, if you ever need to retire, they could use your fucking help. Jesus, look at these guys.
I think I could have taken them, to be honest.
You know, I would have done that. Well, I mean, has there been anything else of note that you've gathered since you've been here, or was it just immediately capture once you fell through?
Yeah, that was pretty much it. I came down to the sinkhole, and boy, that was freaky, freaky. I felt all kinds of horrible feelings, and then I got onto the ground, and I was about to walk, and just a bunch of rocks hit me in the head. And I passed out, and I woke up here.
Like,
it was weird.
Were you standing near I mean, there's no hills or anything around that hole. A bunch of rocks hit you on the head just standing by the hole. Someone hit you. Someone attacked you.
Probably the garlic people if they were guarding the sinkhole. Tony, that would come to your mind.
Out of game, I think that the people, the bunny people from outside, they were throwing stuff. They were throwing carrots and rocks. Mm. So I probably, one of the rocks hit me on the head.
Would fly, because that's absolutely the way, so maybe you were smacked on the head by a rock, by your own people.
I don't think you're hurting, guys.
You asked them, they put in rocks, they threw in sticks, they threw in carrots. Apparently they were throwing in a whole bunch of crap. So,
One of these is the right answer.
or maybe, if the garlic guards were still there, maybe it was a braver one than the one you met and just threw the rock. So, there's a lot
little
of possibilities.
Little column B.
Call me. But so that was weird.
But on our end in the mortal world, there were really, when you first came upon the hole, were there any signs of, I guess... an onion or garlic person coming through?
So nothing that Honey reported, even in the day or so that has passed. There has been no sign of somebody falling from this hole onto the other side.
I mean, we're going to go see someone named Professor Mole. Mole's burrow. So I have high hopes that potentially they might have some more insight for us.
Yeah.
You're right. I guess we'll head that way. What was it? 14 patches forward first? 17 patches?
No, 17 patches down, 14 to the left, then down 7.
Write it down, you smart little cookie.
Well done.
The right 4 patches. Lou has it all in her notebook.
Yeah. Knew you would, Lou.
I have a
Lou's
problem.
Lou's got an intelligence, a hot intelligence score.
Amazing.
She's got such a hot brain. Hell yeah. I will give you a point of inspiration for that. That was a very good idea. Good job. Oh, also, Jorge, you can have a point of inspiration just for being a good sport.
Hey,
starting
out
in a cage. Monte, take a point of inspiration.
Hey.
So you have these directions, thank God, that Lou wrote down. Because as you are, again, looking out around you, and now that you're in the center plaza, there is just really, there is no signs, there's no nothing as you're looking out over all of these various things. And again, it is just remarkable, the number of different environment types and everything mishmashed together. And it just seems to stretch on and on and on. There's no sign of mountain ranges or gaps or other cities or other buildings that you can see in any direction. It's very much like that in-between space in the wilds where it just seems to go on forever. And so the rules, you would assume, are probably going to be very much the same. If you didn't have a destination in mind, you would very quickly get lost in this labyrinth of these various, agricultural patches that seem to make up the Blossom Demesne. And keep in mind, too, some reminders. As you're in a sovereign court Demesne, the rules are going to be very specific to that court. So you can expect the same kind of stuff as you are moving through. It's nice for a duke, pretty innocuous that you've met so far.
It didn't seem that far off from the Eldrin court, so.
Yeah, it's much more like a traditional royal court. You've been dealing, with the heavenly court and the weird sisters all scheming and shit, but sometimes a fae is just a good stinky lord.
nothing at all like the Duke of Pudding.
No. No, a good stink will get you far in this world. So you all want to set off following these instructions?
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. All right, so all of you, you have your plan. You have your set of directions that Lou wrote down for you. So you just want to set off into the Blossom Demesne in search of Professor Mole.
Away!
Away! Yeah.
Away.
So along the road, you see much more of the same. All these very interesting little farms and communities. And as you're starting to view them more and more, you really are starting to get the sense that these are almost little communes, where it looks like about 15 to 20 fae or so seem to coexist and take care of these individual plots. And some of these fae are quite friendly as you're passing through, you might expect in a casual country, like town, people will wave and say morning, you know, over their straw hats and get back to tilling the land. Some are a lot more standoffish, especially those that look like they're, you know, just totally run by just alien beings that don't speak or look anything like humanoids, but they are very involved in their work and don't seem to bother you as you pass. And as you head kind of out away from that central region, those dirt path roads do get a lot wider, and you start to see that the pieces of land around you get much bigger, so much to the point that these patches might be turning into like full-on forests or areas, so it seems to be a little less structured the further away you get from the Duke's actual, like, palace. And so it's on, like, one of these wider open roads that you're finally, like, on that last set of, like, okay, and so now we turn, you know, like, four things to the right as you're going along here. So you've been walking for maybe an hour or so, but then again, time doesn't exist in the fairy realm, so it's like kind of being underground and trying to guess the time. You're like, well, the sun hasn't moved. Anything notable that has happened in terms of conversation on this long walk so far?
I imagine as we're walking, Monty's just like, but anyway, that's just how you make the carrot cake, like it's extra juicy. Mm-hmm. So it's not as dry as ever. So that's really, and probably you can use one of our carrots and that just makes it even more flavorful.
Man, you can talk about carrots.
I don't want to be too forward, but do you want to be best friends?
Sure.
Yeah, I got room.
We're going to have a talk when we get back about maybe sourcing some of your produce because that carrot, so good.
Thank you.
Since I'm invested in your well-being at this point, do you have a fey name that you want to be using out here? Because you can't, I don't know how, like, used to, like, being in the actual Feywild you are, but, like, you shouldn't tell people your name here. You can call me Marnie around others.
Oh.
Yeah, unless you feel otherwise, Jorge, I would assume because you're the Herringon village you've been in, it was probably two or three generations ago that they actually lived in the fairy realm. So you would probably be a child of like second or third gen, okay. Since being out of the wilds, unless you visited by your own choice.
Okay, but I do know about the rules and stuff.
Yeah, you've probably heard, like, maybe there are stories or maybe there were, like, true facts. You've definitely heard that before. Oh, something about the names and...
All right, so a new name. Huh, interesting. Okay, I'm going to be Limon. Yes, that's going to be my new name here.
One of my favorite citruses. Perfect. And she, like, links her arm in yours. and keeps walking.
How large are Herringon? They're actually quite large, aren't they? They're tall, I feel like.
Yeah, so Monte is 6'2", but with his ears, probably more.
I'm still taller. Oh, damn it, your ears, fuck.
Yeah.
That's like when like little kids are like, the hair doesn't count, you haven't spiked. Yeah.
that's
you're not
true.
So tall when you're scared, are you?
Yes, so you all are talking very fondly about carrot cakes, yeah. And when all of a sudden something changes, you've been out on this open road and walking along, and it's been very pleasant, and there's been lots of chatter, and so it's odd when something finally is different. As you're looking ahead of you, in the middle of this dirt road, there is something just lying in the middle of the street. So when you get to about, like, 30 feet or so, you see this thing lying there, and it appears to be some kind of large, like, sack. Like, imagine a very large bag of something like a flour sack just lying in the middle of the road.
Oh.
I kick it.
You want to walk all the way up to it to see it better?
Yeah.
Okay. So when you get within like 15 feet of it or so, you'll see writing on it. And The weird, so the time you've spent in the Fae, I don't know if you all have noticed this as player characters, but it is an effect that happens. You've spent enough time in the Fae that, like, the letters kind of jumble a little bit, and as you kind of blink, at first you don't know what it says, but you blink, and then you can see very clearly written in common, fertilizer.
Fertilizer. Like
when you get within 10 feet or so of it.
Oh, okay.
Do you still want to keep going towards it?
I mean, yeah, it's in the way we're supposed to be going, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's like a, you know, 3x3 foot bag, like a normal, like, potting soil bag. Like one of the big ones you would see at, like, a Home Depot.
All right, I'm gonna
pick
up
fertilizer, and it's just laying there, and there's nothing around it. It's just in the middle of the road.
I'm gonna pick up a rock, and I'm gonna do magic stone and imbue it with magic.
Nice.
And throw it at the bag of fertilizer.
All right, you do. And as you, like, throw it, yeah, go ahead and roll to attack, I guess. Yeah, that's how that spell works. Roll an attack roll.
I miss the bag of fertilizer.
It's your first time ever using a druid spell, so okay, let's talk just for a second. This new class has come to you. Is this something Tony was training for and expecting, or is this the fucking magic of the Feywilds that has started to change you and giving you strange powers? Let's talk about that.
I think it's that one.
So it's more like you're mutating.
Yeah, exactly. Spending this much time, and especially in this Blossom Court realm in particular, something is happening with her own, like, natural affinity and love for plants that... It's changing something in her. And yeah, she just wants to throw a rock at it just to see if anything will happen. But it just happens to also change the rock when she picks it up.
All of a sudden, yeah, when you go and you go to throw it, just, yeah, whew, and it whizzes out of your hand and you didn't.
Yeah.
You don't think you threw it. And that's so weird. And it startles you and you definitely go, and your hand, like, whew, and so a rock goes flinging off and you're like, I definitely did not throw that rock.
Yeah.
So Tony's freaking out.
She's going to pick up another rock and try one more time and be like, what did I just do?
So yes, Monte, I'm sorry, you were saying something.
I was just looking at that and I was amazing. I didn't know you could do... I'll probably know the names of the spells and all stuff, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So I would know it was magic there.
Yeah. You're okay. Like, whoa, you've seen people do stuff. Even some of the people in your village have magic. Like, I mean, you have a little bit, but like...
Okay, so I'll just look at Tony and... Oh, you're a mage too.
You're a mage?
No, not even a little bit. I don't know what that was.
Do it again.
Yeah, I want to. Well, let's just see if it happens again.
That's actually... powerful. That's magic.
Go ahead and roll your attack.
That one was a nat 20.
Oh, shit. Okay.
I'm a quick learner.
You throw that. First nat of the episode. Yes. So you throw that, and how does your rock explode a bag of like, fertilizer? Like, so it's just explodes it.
It explodes it. Then probably much
it's like throwing a baseball at a goddamn, like, potting soil bag. Yeah.
Yeah.
Explodes
I think definitely there's a tear that happens, initial tear that happens in the sack while the top kind of poofs up like a volcano eruption. And then the guts start to spill out of the tear.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you're like, and like this putrid dink like comes out of the bag. It's just like, fertilizer rains down everywhere. You're like, whoa! Take that minute. You're like, that was so cool! Ooh, make me a constitution saving throw.
Oh no, what did I do? No. What have I done?
Uh-oh. Consequences in this
consequences
economy?
To actions? No!
Never heard of them.
17.
With a 17, you do pretty well, but as you're smelling it, you're like, ooh, that's rank. And it's not just that. It's like... oh, it's that familiar feeling where your brain almost gets a little scrambled for a moment, and you're like, oh, what is that? And you kind of fight through this, like, groggy feeling as something was definitely in that that was trying to, like, scramble your senses. And as you're feeling, like, a little going on, you all begin to hear, like, leaping out from the wheat fields to your left and the orchards from your right. You start to see shapes. Like, coming onto the road, and you hear a voice that rings out over you. Ha-ha! You have come upon our stretch of land! Prepare to be raided! And you see beings start to surge out from the sides, like we're like hiding in the corn and the wheat. And as they spring out, you see their bodies appear, they're very long and thin, and they appear to be made entirely of like twisted vines. But all of them, their heads seem to be these very large flowers of various types that are just like crowning their bodies. And all of them are wielding bows and swords, almost like bandits on the side of the road. Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Was their trap the bag of fertilizer? I'm not sure if those things were connected.
It's the best food in the land. Like a mouse to a mouse trap. You have fun. And that's also the voice will say, like a mouse to a mouse trap, you have fallen into my spell. And this voice is coming from somewhere. Not one of the people you've identified, but let's go ahead and roll some initiative.
Oh, no.
Yay. Oh, I got a 5.
I got a 3.
Oh, dear.
Aoife rolled a 3 for a total of 7.
Y'all.
Guys!
What is going on?
Monte, save us.
23.
Thank
God. Oh, my God. Thank you. Okay. So I just want to recap for the audience at home. Monte got a 23.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next highest is Aoife with a 7.
Doing the best. So
that's a 16-point difference, guys, if anybody is tracking.
We've been on break for a while. We're
listen. Best. Jorge is the only one who is ready to play this fucking game, is all I'm saying. So
don't shame my bad luck.
I literally got a 1.
How dare you?
I rolled a 1, too.
So, Monte, you are the only one who's, like, handling this in any form. So, all of a sudden, all of these beings, like, spring out from the various sides of you. So, looking around you, you can see that there are 4 of these apparent, like, plant creatures. And they have just, they're all within, like, 10 feet of you on either side. And you can see that they all have different flower heads. You see that there are 2, like, daisy-headed ones.
Oh, okay.
And then there are 2 rose-headed ones. And they're beautiful. Like, they're little flower heads and stuff, but they're, yeah, clearly looking at you with, like...
Intent.
Intent, yes. And they have bows drawn, and 2 of them have swords drawn. So you have the first reaction here as they go, ha-ha, and spring from either side.
Okay, so do I think that by talking to them, would they seem reasonable to not start a fight?
Why don't you go ahead and give me a insight check, and I won't make that take your action, but you can just do a...
-1 to it. Ew. Oh, okay, 17.
Okay, they seem very overconfident, very assured that they have the upper hand here, and... you see no reason why they would buckle to diplomacy at this time. So it feels pretty safe to say that maybe until you give them a sound thrashing,
Okay. These
folks are
Got it. Not
interested in laying low.
All right. So I just snap my fingers and the super greatsword, it looks so cool. I can't underestimate how cool it looks. It's so cool.
Yep. It's so cool. It's too cool.
Yeah. So I just looked at everybody, and I just swing the greatsword. And as I do that, I cast Burning Hands. So it looks like a burning slash all over cool. this
so
people.
Cool.
But I'm not trying to hit them. It's more like a warning flare kind of thing.
Ooh. Okay, cool. Yeah, give me that. Roll that damage for me still and see like how much damage you actually do to like the surrounding crops and stuff.
Okay, so that's 3d6.
Yeah, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make you roll an intimidation after this, but all the damage you add will get added to that d20 roll for your intimidation.
Okay, so that's a 15.
Okay. So Sick. Go ahead and roll me that intimidation roll with plus 15.
Oh my god.
Oh, that's a good thing
bananas.
Because I have plus 0.
Okay, no worries.
Oh, so plus 15?
Yeah.
24.
Holy shit, yeah. So you are like... And you've got, like you said, that cool blade and just you're doing the burning hand. What's like your gesture? Because you have, is it a one-handed weapon and you're doing like
it's
a cool...
It's double-handed weapon.
Nice.
So I just kind of do the thing just over the blade.
Yeah.
And I just swing it. And as I do, it looks like a spark starts on the hilt of it. And like flame goes over it in this like a wave of flames.
And you're avoiding them, right?
Yes.
Cool. So you cut this like cool arc around them essentially. And because you're surrounded by, you know, wheat and corn on either side, there's just like this blackened char that follows where you are. And like clearly all behind it, all the plants like falling on either side, like just erupt into flame. And these two like rose-headed beings who like you, you know, curled over, like are looking at you like, huh, oh.
And I say, as I do that, we don't want any trouble. We just want to get to our mission, so we don't want any trouble. If you want trouble, we're going to give you trouble.
And when it goes,
boss?
Boss? He kind of yells out, and there's a long pause where the rose-headed people start to look a little bit nervous, and then there's a, yeah, what? That comes from hidden somewhere. I think they might be more trouble than they're worth, boss! And there's a long, considered pause. I see! And then, like, tumbling out of the like, plants in front of you, you see another of these plant figures who just seems a little bit taller and has, like, a little bit fuller petals as he's looking at you with his, like, flower head and stands up to his full size and says, aha, I see. Perhaps this day we have meddled too far ahead of our station. My sincere apologies. And takes a very long, flourishing bow towards you all. Who amongst you is the leader? Is it this fire mage?
No.
Ah, then it must be you. And looks at you, Fotonia, like in armor and stuff, and the other tallest person. Please. Madam, my sincerest apologies for interrupting your passage. He goes and, like, to, like, hold out his hand as if to take your hand.
She mimics his posture and then puts her hand on top of his.
yes. And he kisses it anyway. He kisses your open palm in a very awkward and strange gesture. He says, Dandy. Dandelion.
Oh, my God. Service.
Please romance this flower.
She gives like a light little pat on their cheek after they like kissed her hands, like, pleasure. I don't know why, but that's her move. And she is a Tony, Fotonia, Silvertail.
Wondrous. It is remarkable to meet mortals upon the road, if I do not err in my guess. We were simply not prepared for those of your station, of course. Men, retreat, retreat! And they go, okay. Like, they've never done this before in their lives. They kind of just walk backwards and sort of fade into the bush around them. And you can hear them going, is this right? Like, I don't know, like, from the sides of the road.
Tell me, Dandy, before
yes,
we go into anything else,
when you say my name, it is like a bell that rings upon my ears. Oh my God.
All right, relax, buddy. We can relax.
Relax? No. Life is short. The time for love is even shorter. You are beautiful, and I will not deny it.
Have you seen a princess? A little garlicky girl?
I've waited my whole life for a princess, and here she is.
Okay, I that's my bad. That's my bad.
Walked right into that one, didn't you?
Oh, fuck. I don't know what to do anymore. You keep talking nice to me.
It is the only language I know beyond the language of love. He waggles his, like, plant eyebrows.
Little, what was the princess's name? You gotta help me out here.
Princess Burgundy. And she's, like, fumbling to put her knives back as she was trying to grab them.
Princess Burgundy.
Oh, the young garlic girl?
That's the one.
She has gone missing, you say?
Indeed, and we are hoping to retrieve her.
When youth is just cut down in its prime, it could make one weep.
I'm gonna do an insight check. This guy's a lot. It's 22.
Wow, yeah, I mean, he sure is a lot, and you can tell this is a cultivated personality. Perhaps, I mean, with a 22, perhaps he's compensating for something, but, you know, this is who he is, and he's dedicated to it. So he's living his truth, and he does seem to actually recognize who this girl is. He doesn't seem to be deceiving you in any way, other than the bravado. That is terribly unfortunate. Duke Waller does tend to get so upset about such things. It would be mighty disadvantageous to those of my profession if the Duke did indeed not receive his daughter and, oh well, and enforced harsher restrictions upon his highways. You say you are in pursuit of a solution of some kind, madame?
Well, yes. We're seeking out the professor, Mole.
Oh, Professor Mole, a great friend of mine. In fact, you are just a few paces from his abode. As way of payment for my transgressions, for my assumptions about you, which, of course, forgive me, the eyes are flawed, but now I stand before you, the heart sees clearly. I would be more than happy to escort you and your companions to see the professor.
I don't know if we should be around this guy, or if we should just head home straight.
I'm just going to
really frazzling me.
He smells great.
I believe it. All right. Well, please. I'm sure you know these grounds fairly well, and I accept your payment.
Wonderful. It is a terrible thing to owe a favor to one such. Of such loveliness, it would clearly cast my heart into a chasm of sorrow if I could not pay back what I have wronged you. So please.
Lou is just holding on to both Monte and Aoife, trying not to explode into laughter, literally just trying not to offend this poor, poor man. She's just like... Milady, yes, if you would like to take the lead, Madame Franny.
Well, too late for that.
We are but your servants. She curtsies.
Oh my god.
Dandy nods expectantly at this news.
Amazing. Let's go.
I just turn to Aoife and just say, what is happening right now?
Where?
She just shakes her head. She's like, I haven't got a feckin' clue, I'll be honest.
If Rook was here, and I realize now I didn't explain where Rook was at the beginning, Rook had to stay behind at the sinkhole because Honey would not let them leave totally unprotected. So Rook volunteered if any monsters came back. Rook is up there with the bun buns waiting.
That makes sense.
But you hear Rook psychically die during this whole conversation. Right, so Dandy will take off, arm in yours. Tony will try to get his, like, spindly vine arm in yours.
I regret this decision to assume the position of leader.
Yeah. He also seems to stretch his body a little bit more, so he becomes as tall as you. So his flower is, like, ahead of you. Oh, so he becomes a little bit more Jack Skellington as he, like, does that. And continues at a very slow pace, walking along the country road.
She's walking very cautiously, I suppose, and like kind of tries to slowly unravel her arm, more of like, oh, gesturing around the scenery. What about this?
Oh, it's so weird because his arm can grow longer and like twine, and it's just you're doing this the entire time. Your arms are like, haha, oh, look,
it looks
over
like
here,
we're doing some weird arm dance, but
yeah. So Aoife, Lou, and Monty, you get a whole show of this as you're going along. So this goes on for another 10 minutes or so until you come to another of these crossroads fork in the road. And here you see just a mound of dirt, like half a coconut just stuck in the middle of this way with a round door and some like foggy glass panes all around it, a little chimney stack. And as you like cross into this clearing way, a person bursts out of this front door and is like waving a cane and has this like gigantic bifocal like glasses and is like, "Oh, you get off my property, get off my property." And as you're like, "What the fuck?" You start to hear little pew, pew, pew sounds like coming from out of the ground as you see things exploding from the ground. And in the hail of everything, you see these like small little like pale purple tendrils poking out, almost like tentacles erupting from the ground. And you see that this individual was not talking to you as he starts to like beat his cane down on these small things. And he's like, "Well, what are you waiting for? Help!"
All right.
Yes, sir.
Your flower friends will go, "Ha ha! To arms," Dandy says, and like draws a rapier as more and more of these things. And you can see like there are dozens of these things scattered around. And as Dandy starts whapping at them and this old guy is whapping at him with their cane, the ground starts to rumble all around you. And this person who came out of the door, who looks like a mole as a person, is like squinting around and going, "They're coming! They're coming! Hold on!" That's where we're going to end the episode for today.
Oh, no.
Oh, my
God. I am ready for a fight.
Ready. So, thank you all. Thank you all for joining us for this very fun dip into the Blossom Court. I know we haven't seen a Sovereign Court yet, and boy, they're weird. So I hope you all are enjoying this little flavor of the Garden Fae Court, which is largely considered the least threatening of all the courts by the other courts. Their whole philosophy is, you know what? Eventually, all the people will die, and then the plants will eat them, and we'll inherit the world. So who needs to war and stuff?
Oh my God.
Just gotta be patient.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It's their general philosophy. So thank you all so much for joining us. I had a very fun time with all these weird NPCs, and I cannot wait to see where this goes next time. Luckily, Jorge will be joining us for his fabulous character will return next time. All right, I guess before we go and stuff, Jorge, just tell people where they can find you, like who you are, how they can support you in the space.
It's me, RoboGoblin. You can find me at TTRPGifs on Twitch, Twitter, and Hive. And I was telling them before on our break that this has been my dream. Honestly, dream to playing with this amazing group of folks is just amazing. But thank you so much for having me.
We are so thrilled to have you, and we can't wait to get into some, like, real trouble next time. This time it's all been rapscallions and dandies, so, you know, it'll be intense next time. But thank you so much for joining us. We are so, so happy to have you. And, of course, we always like to say, you know, if you enjoyed the show, please do like, subscribe if you're listening on any of the video platforms. Subscribing really helps. Just telling people about the show is the greatest way to get the word out as well. And if you're listening on podcasts, please do make sure to, whatever podcast app you're on, review, like, throw some stars. It really helps for people to find the show, especially in this tumultuous time when D&D creators are going through a lot. It really means your support to have your voices and to even have your dollars in some cases, which leads me to our Patreon, which is a really great place that you can go and support us. You can donate month after month. In exchange, you get some really cool rewards, including podcast versions of episodes that we typically don't publish on the main feed, coloring book pages, some really awesome stuff. We just had an expose or a menu of the Witch's Brew expose. I don't know what's the right word.
A detailing of the Witch's Brew location. So if you are familiar with JB's Taverns, Inns, and Tap Ruins, where he goes through and he writes about taverns and tap rooms, what you can order there that's on the drink menu, you know, what kind of accommodations are about the people who own it. So writing about that for our favorite locale in Coven, the Witch's Brew. So you get to read about Tandy, the mysterious chef. You get to read about their mysterious background and about all the drinks and food that you can order there and about the a little bit about the history of where the Witch's Brew came from. So you can find that on our Patreon page.
Yeah, so we're always publishing fun stuff like that. So make sure to go and support even as little as $1 a month or just a $12 donation for the year can get you access to a lot of cool things. But we want to take some time to highlight the folks who donate at the higher donor tiers because you are so fucking amazing and we love you and thank you. The show literally could not function without all of your donations. So thank you. We're paying our fantastic guests. We're paying our cast members with your love and support. So let's go around and say thank you. Thank you so much to Debbie.
Thank you to our Mod and Eldritch Kauai Queen, Curry.
Thank you to Muffin at the One on Drury Lane on Twitter.
Thank you so much to Nissa McKinnon.
And for our fairest drinking mate tier, thank you so much, Chris.
And thank you to Markalai, our other mod.
Thank you, Fable.
And of course, thank you, Tony.
Hey! Tony. And thank you so much, Sheepish Gnome.
And thank you, last but definitely not least, Ben, aka Flower Crown Gaming.
Our Wiki King, Wiki King, King of our hearts. Thank you. Thank you. We love you. All right. That's it. That's all we got for you. So let's do the outros and then we're out of here. So thank you so much, everybody, for watching. I have been your Dungeon Master, Celeste Conowich.
Hello, I have been Katie, playing Luberi Sath, your Drow Rogue.
Hey, I'm Nassim, and I have been your half-orc fighter, Tony Silvertail, who's now just a little baby druid.
Little baby druid.
Secret druid.
Secret druid.
I love it. And I am Sage, and I play Aoife Flannery of Better Homes and Bardens magazine.
These are getting so good.
And I have been Robogoblin, or Jorge, a.k.a. Monte, the Herringon Eldritch Knight.
Yes, who saved our bacon this week, because boy, that would have been a hard fight. So for any of those of you curious, the flower folk that showed up, they're called Magnifita, and they are indeed in the Venture Maiden's campaign guide, and they are indeed either CR6 or CR8, depending on which kinds, and there were five of them. So Jorge, thank you. Monte just saved my whole party, so we appreciate you.
Thank you so much,
you.
Because honestly, I always choose violence.
They do. They do, or hey, I don't know what to do with them. It's constant and irrepressible. But anyway, thank you all so much for joining us. And Jorge, as I'm sure you're aware, we do this very hot mess thing at the end where we all try to say Venture Away at the same time. So we're gonna do it. So I'm gonna say until next time, and then I'm gonna go Venture Away. But here we go. Okay, so until next time,
Venture Away!